and the enemy was in these places, and we had to fight them there, and that's what we did. And later on, in 1970, we sent our army into Cambodia. We were widening the war. No, we weren't widening the war. That's where the war was, man. And you got to go where the enemy is. And the same thing in Laos, the North Vietnamese were trying to do two things. In the north, they were trying to come down from the top and take over the Laotian government. In the south, they were using southern Laos. If you look at southern Laos, it's right in the middle of the entire area. It is the strategic terrain of that theater there. They were using that as their conduit to bring their supplies into the south, the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And we had to destroy that, and we tried to use air power to do that. And we would use our forward air controllers to direct those fighters too. During the war in Southeast Asia, we sent hundreds of thousands of our fine soldiers and Marines, our grunts, to fight that ground war. And we were in there using our air power to defend them and help them win their battles. That air power was Navy coming in off of the carriers. It was from our Air Force bases. We had six of them. I'd rather be up there. We were bringing in, we had our Air Force fighter bombers and all those aircraft up there supporting us. And of course, all of our military branches, the Marines and the Army, have big aviation branches that were there to support our troops. And every day, that's what we were doing. And we knew that if we could get up on the Ho Chi Minh Trail or up in northern Laos where those forces were coming through and destroy them, that meant our grunts in the south didn't have to fight them. And that was the value of that air power. And I served over there from about September of 1972 to February of 1973 when they declared ceasefire in Laos and we were then stopped operating. We were limited to flying 120 hours a month, which meant that when you hit 120 hours for that month, you stopped logging time. Because the war didn't stop, the fighting didn't stop, our friendlies needed us, and we would go out and do that. So that's the big picture. That's why we call it the secret war, and that's why I say to you, when people ask me, what did you do in Vietnam? And I said, well, really, I served in Southeast Asia, because I was in Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, a little bit, a couple of times illegally in North Vietnam, because that's where our war was. And one of the weapons, one of the most ubiquitous and iconic weapons that we used in that war were these little aircraft right here, little O-1s. Now, you can go down on that ramp over there, and you can see all those fancy esoteric jets and all kinds of very sophisticated machines and everything, and that's all really great. But this is air power, too. And what we do with these little bitty airplanes here, they don't look like much. And I got to tell you, when I checked out in the O-1, it's very simple to fly, except for one thing. It's got that funny little wheel in the tail. And up to that time, I had flown nothing but tricycle gear, right? So when I check out in the O-1, basically it's a two-day process, but the requirement is I had to get 100 landings. And every landing required a taxi back. And I said, you got to be shitting me. What are you doing? He said, you just wait. And the whole idea was I had to learn how to land an airplane like this with a tailwheel. It's a different process. And yes, I've ground looped. I've been there, okay? Fortunately, I didn't hurt anybody or anything. But so that's what I did over there as a Raven. And I've got some slides I'd like to show you that'll highlight some of our particular missions. But I think we're going to switch subjects now and talk about the airplanes, okay?
Yep.
So let's do that, Ed.
Yep, we've got Mike and Jim here who are going to talk. These are their airplanes, and as I said, they're absolutely spotless. They got a couple simulated rockets on the wings, and Daryl will probably talk about that. But with that, I'll turn it over to who wants to go first? Jim, Mike, your call.
Yeah.
All right.
Just turned on.
Jim's
yeah.
got it, and he can talk about the airplanes and... fill you in.
Yeah, I don't have as much to talk about. Mike can tell you more about the airplane. I just wanted to say that I didn't realize what was going on. You know, I graduated from high school in 1974. The war was pretty well over. And I, you know, we heard about this secret war thing going on and really didn't understand until I got involved in the Warbird program a little bit. We bought a T-28. And one of the things that they first done when I got involved with the group was go to the Hmong convention, which were the people that we supported in Laos. And I didn't know anything about that. And after meeting those people and hearing the story, I became more interested in the secret war of Southeast Asia. So our mission, and when I say that, is with the Aviation Heritage Foundation in Eastern Iowa, is we're trying to put together a collection of operating aircraft that tells the story of these guys and what they've done in the secret war. I don't think that's been told enough, and we want to keep the aircraft flying and tell the story, and also the people that were allied with us in Southeast Asia at that time. Because as Daryl mentioned, when I researched it, I found too that there was a lot of fighting going on that we haven't talked about, and I think the story needs to be told while these guys are still with us. So thank you for letting us bring the airplane, and I'm interested to hear Daryl's story, and I've read a lot of his books and a lot of the other veterans' books that were over there too, so trying to get the story correct. So
Mike, you got it.
Thanks, Jim. Well, I'm the somewhat historian, per se, for this event. Regarding, and tell you a little bit about the airplanes. Don't worry, I won't put you all to sleep, but I hope to keep you awake. '49, the Army came up with a new contract. They wanted something to replace the aging, quickly World War II liaison aircraft. That's about all they had left. So, put out a contract, five companies went after it, including Cessna. They won the contract with the Bird Dogs, started building them late 1950, sending them out to Army units in Korea, training bases here in the States. Of course, they continued with them. Vietnam starts firing up, and that was their next combat assignment, was Vietnam. The two we have here today, mine is the orange one here. Both are A models, by the way. And mine represents Army, our participation and use of the airplane in the 50s. It's in its original all-orange colors. Out of a little over 3,400 built in 11 years, roughly 600 to 700 left the factory this color. Go figure. And they went to training bases. The other aircraft, Jim's here, is painted to represent the Air Force Oscar ones, used during the Vietnam conflict and a few neighboring places. And both are equipped with replica rockets. Mine is a trainer. This is the first aircraft they learned to fire them with. And the people assigned overseas, when they got into Vietnam, it was the real thing. They could carry up to eight of the rockets, but they're going darn slow and heavy with that many. They took four of them off. So how it goes. Fantastic airplane to fly. Easy to fly. Yes, it's a tail dragger. It's a little bit more demanding than some, but a real sweetheart. It's often been called, whether it's been with Marines, Army, Air Force, whomever, most feared aircraft in the military inventory. People flying these had an awful lot of friends with a lot of firepower.
Mike, how about gross weight?
Oh, they ran anywhere from 21 to 2,800 pounds gross. Although I've heard a lot of stories of them going out on missions in Southeast Asia, 3,200 pounds, all in 213 horsepower. Or if you're lucky enough, had one of the few constant speed Bird Dogs, you had a whopping 225. Oh my God. So a lot was asked of them.
What kind of range? How long can they fly?
You're good for right around 4 hours range with a small reserve.
Okay. All right. We're tight on time, so thank you very much for the synopsis, and I'll turn it back over to Daryl.
Okay, now let's talk about using the O-1 as a weapon of war, okay? Simple airplane to fly. I wasn't using that airplane to fly. I was using that airplane to get myself up to where I needed to be to help the battle that I was involved in. You can see the rocket rails on each of the wings there. These warheads over here are anti-armor. Again, if you're going against hard targets like tanks over here, these are smoke rockets. Need to mark a target on the ground. We had another warhead called a flechette. When you would fire that, it would break it open. It had about 1,000 little nails in it. Very effective against troops on the ground, okay? But how did we employ this aircraft? Normally, as he as Mike said, about 4 hours worth of gas. So I would take off. The fuel gauges were notoriously inaccurate, so I'd keep my own time hack. I'd fly left wing for an hour, right wing for an hour, left wing for a half hour, right wing for a half hour. And about that time, unless I'm really in the middle of a serious situation, I'm looking for gas, okay? Where could I find gas? All over northern Laos when I was working there. And this little airplane will land just about anywhere, okay? I put it on 10,000-foot asphalt concrete runways. I put it on roads that were 10 feet wide. You go where you need to go. In fact, I think I've got a... okay. Hold off on that slide. Now, go back to the previous one, please, Scott. There you go. The area that I flew in was called the Plain of Jars in northern Laos, and that's a composite photograph that I took when I was over there one day. You can see the rails of my airplane there. The Plain of Jars was a very high plateau strategic area, constantly fought out during the war. They called it the Plain of Jars. We call it the Valley of Death, and for good reasons. But when I would fly this airplane, I'd get in, I'd have a bag of maps. I have probably had more maps than you could cover that whole screen with, because I had to be able to use military maps, I had to be able to use aviation maps to be able to coordinate, to bring in my fast mover aircraft to hit targets down below. The key item that I used to do that, of course, was my radios. That allowed me to talk to my airplanes, my air traffic control on VHF, or my Fox mic to talk to my ground forces. And a lot of times when I would fly, I would have a translator in the back seat, usually a Hmong tribesman, who could talk to the folks on the ground. I never forget one day I'm working a target, and I asked my backseater, I said, now I need to know, are those friendly troops down there? And he gets involved in about a 20-minute conversation. Finally, I asked him, and I said, what's the answer? The guy said, yes. Okay.